What's up, Hawkeye fans? This is Chad Lystico of the Des Moines Register. I'm the Hawkeye's columnist for our illustrious newspaper, and bringing along shortly my reporting friend based in Iowa City, Mark Emmert. And we are here on this Thursday edition of the Subscriber Podcast for Hawk Central to discuss a lot of things. And we're going to actually start with last night's Iowa basketball win, which was much needed. Mark Emmert, 79-66 at home. I don't want to say it was a comfortable win because there were a few tense moments, but Iowa led pretty much throughout. What'd you kind of make of the game?
Yeah, they certainly took control early in terms of the defensive end. And, Rutgers never really got going. They looked kind of bad all night, off target, off kilter. I don't know what they were, but they're not a great offensive team. But Iowa, I thought, really handled them pretty well, both ends. You're right, they got within six there. Way through the second half, that's kind of when Iowa's been stumbling lately, is that, that's what you kind of wondered, okay, here we go. It's an 8-9 minute mark, and will that lead evaporate this time? And they put Fran went right back to Garza and Bohannon. That's what I wrote about. Garza and Bohannon were sitting on the bench for like 5 seconds, and he went right back to them when they got that lead down from 11 to 6. And I think the message there was obvious, like, let's get you guys back out there and get this thing under control, because you can't let this happen again. And they didn't. I thought Rutgers would play better, because they had been playing better lately. I thought they were a better team than that. And then part of me thinks, well, maybe they just, played poorly because Iowa was really, really determined to win that game. And Iowa is the better team, and they showed it. So, to get a sweep of Rutgers this year, I think is really, that's pretty, I mean, it's not Northwestern, that's pretty meaningful. Now getting swept by Indiana is still a problem, but I think this is a really good step for Iowa to, to kind of reassert itself a little bit. And obviously Joe Wieskamp was as good as we've ever seen him.
Yeah, I think this was one of his two career best games, maybe three if you count the 30-point game against Nebraska, but that was Nebraska. I go back to that game against Maryland last year. Well, that too, actually, his freshman year. But Maryland last year at home, when Maryland came in as a top 10, top 15 team, and he scored 26 and 11, that was without Frederick. That was a 67-49 win against a good Maryland team. That kind of got Iowa going early in the year. But last night was the type of game they needed. Without Wieskamp, Mark, Iowa shot 4 for 23 in the first half. If you take away his shooting,
I know.
I mean,
it was really amazing to watch them just clank so many shots, and I think they were getting good looks too. And it was just they missed their first nine.
It was eight. I think it was eight. Yeah.
Yeah, and then they finally didn't score until like 4 minutes into the game. That's why I thought the defense was like, but that tied the game.
Yeah, 3-3. That was Wieskamp. Yeah.
The first basket. I know. To me, it's like. You think if you only have scored, you haven't scored in the first 4.5 minutes, you're going to be down like 12 to nothing or something. But, the defense really kind of kept them in there. And Wieskamp was big on the defensive end, too, I thought. So he's a big part of that. And then, Rutgers is not a great shooting team, but they missed 15 of their first 16 three-pointers in that game.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it really was amazing. And actually, Iowa at Indiana, Indiana only shot 6 of 23 from three. So their three-point defense has been much better lately. Maybe they're just playing teams that aren't very good, but I think there's a combination of both there. And by the time the offense woke up in the second, I thought they would, Chad, because I wrote this at halftime. Like, they were 10 of 32 at the half, but they had 9 assists on those 10 shots, 10 baskets. They only had 3 turnovers. The offense looked good. They were moving the ball well. They just were, Garza was having trouble getting his shots to fall. And I thought they would, turn around in the second half. They're 16 to 28 as a team. And really kind of, and there's no way Rutgers would keep up with that. I mean, Rutgers is not a good enough offensive team anyway, but certainly last night they weren't good enough. So once Iowa started hitting his shots, it became pretty obvious that they would pull away and win this game, but it was nice to see, I think, Wieskamp to get that confidence and see him hit some big shots late as well, as you wrote in your column. Like, he wasn't just good in one half, he was good in both halves,
right?
And Iowa needed all that.
Yeah, for sure. You guys can check that out at hawkcenter.com. I wrote a lot about Mr. Wieskamp, really impressive, and I actually think he's been actually great lately. It just the only lingering thing is, he disappears a little bit in the second half, and last night he certainly didn't. He scored 8 straight points after Iowa. Iowa's lead was closed down to 58-50. It was 58-51 for a second until they recalibrated Harper's long shot to a 2.
So a step back.
So essentially it felt like almost a 9-point surge there for the Hawkeyes, so that was big. And One more point about what you said with Iowa's struggles early. In my notes, I had in Rutgers' first 12 possessions, and Iowa was leading 13-7 after those 12 possessions. They scored three times, but they went one and done nine times on 12 of those on those 12 mm-hmm. possessions. In other words, Iowa was getting the defensive board. Now, it became a problem later, but that was actually really important also early, and that obviously must have been an emphasis to hit the defensive boards, because that's been a little bit of a problem lately
It really killed them against Ohio State, for sure. Their inability to read the rebound, that. And you know, I think Indiana had 15 offensive rebounds, but really didn't do much with them because they're such a bad offensive team. They didn't get – I think they only had 11 second chance points. But, you heard both – I think both Garza and Wieskamp last night talk about the importance of getting those defensive rebounds. And Rutgers ends up with 11 offensive rebounds, but they also missed, you know, like 40 shots or whatever. So you're going to have a lot more chances when you're doing that. And so, you know, 14 second chance points, but Iowa gets 21 second chance points. So, you know, you'll take that. And, I thought that Bohannon, you know, he had the four turnovers. That was a little troubling. But I thought he actually ran the show really well for Iowa last night with the 12.7 assists. Kind of chose his spots when to hit those, when to take the shots. He was 3 of 5 from three, and that's really efficient. And Garza did get it going in the second half. Had 14 points in the second half of his 22. And he kind of knew he would, but he's been really, really hounded lately, and I do think you saw that Frederick makes a difference there. I think that Frederick might have assisted. He had three assists. I think were they all on Garza baskets too?
I think so. And they were all pretty kind of in that key, you know, put away stretch in the second half too.
Yeah. So he didn't score. Obviously, he didn't really shoot much. You can tell he's still not 100%, and probably not. Maybe won't be the rest of the year, but. You know, that was important for Iowa to get him back in there a little bit, I think, and because Connor McCaffrey, we didn't ask him about this, but he apparently hurt his leg at some point. I'm surprised he came back in the game at all. Like he kind of hobbled off a little bit, holding on. I don't know if it was a hamstring or what it was. And then late in the game, they kind of put him back up there for a couple defensive possessions. But you know, just think if they didn't have either one of those guys, now you're kind of cobbling things together with, you know, Keegan Murray, and we saw Tony Perkins, and, you know, Euless get some run, and Joe Toussaint is so far in the doghouse right now that he's barely a factor anymore for some reason. So they really needed, you know, Frederick 17 minutes, I think.
Yeah. I didn't actually hear it with my own ears because we were in our own post game, but supposedly Fran said Connor wasn't feeling well yesterday as well, so I think that was part of it. Mm-hmm. He only played 12:51. That was I think probably
cramped up a little bit.
Yeah, so yeah, he goes 0 for 1 and doesn't score. Actually, I wanted to talk about that a little bit because I actually thought the lineup with Bohannon, Frederick, Wieskamp, Murray, and Garza, it's kind of interesting that was kind of the default lineup at the end of that Rutgers game the first time, and that became the kind of go-to lineup this time as well to help complete that. So I really like that lineup because they can all hit from three. They can all extend it. And Murray and Wieskamp are very capable rebounders. I mean, that's nothing against the other things that Connor does. But when you got, you know, we heard from Media Day that Keegan Murray's, you know, top two attributes are outside shooting and rebounding. That's a pretty good combination there, especially when you have that same combination with Joe Wieskamp. And, you know, Wieskamp gets 10 boards. Keegan gets 6, 4 on the offensive end, and Luka has 10. So that's where you make some difference on the boards. I like that lineup a lot.
Yeah, and I think obviously, you know, we probably will see more of that, I think. I mean, it does seem like Connor's minutes are kind of sliding a little bit lately. He's not playing quite as much as he has in the past, and maybe Fran's realizing that, you know, there's other guys that give him what he needs at certain times. I'm not saying Connor McCaffrey won't be a big part of this team, but maybe he'll be more of a, you know, 15 to 20 minute a game guy going forward, you know, depending on the matchup. And obviously Keegan Murray really likes playing against Rutgers because he had 10 and 6 again last night.
Yeah, right, right.
And he was good, you know, really in both halves. I thought Patrick McCaffrey had some really nice moments in the second half.
Which is,
you know, good for him, I think, because he was really not good at Indiana. As we all saw, the whole bench was pretty bad at Indiana. But I think that's, you know, when you look at bench points, obviously having Murray on the bench is a big part of that. You know, when he starts,
That's true.
You know, they don't count as bench points. So, you know, having Frederick as a starter, at least you got Murray coming off the bench. But I think Fran likes him better off the bench. Mm-hmm. And I think you can see why. And I just think that he just kind of brings a little bit of a spark, kind of Nicholas Bear. I keep comparing, making that comparison, but that, there is some validity to that. And, you know, who starts isn't really as important, I guess, as who finishes. And so, obviously, we saw who finished last night. And I think we might see more of that going forward. I just really don't know what to make now of this Joe Toussaint situation.
Yeah, that's, because, people are still fired up about that.
Yeah. At Indiana, he was like, you probably saw the game, but he came in and turned the ball over like twice in a minute, and he never played again. And he was really, the body language is not good. He was on the bench, kind of slouching. There was one timeout where he didn't even come join the team. He just sat on the bench.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And after the game, you could tell he was not happy. And then last night, it wasn't quite as bad, but still, I mean, 5 minutes and he was out. So I just thought maybe there's something in practice going on where they don't like his practice habits. And obviously, as soon as he makes a mistake in the game, he kind of gets pulled back out. Maybe Ulis is going to start getting some more minutes there. Mm-hmm. But, if Toussaint can't keep it together here, they're going to have to find other options, obviously, because he has a guy that can, play, 12, 15 minutes a night. So again, that's really important to have Frederick back in that rotation.
Yeah,
because
for sure.
You know, he saw him. There was times when he was bringing the ball up last night, and he certainly can do that. And obviously, he gives you a solid defense. He's a little bigger body out there than Joe T. So, every season kind of has its like evolution. Things ebb and flow, and maybe this is a time where we're going to see less Toussaint, less McCaffrey, and more Keegan Murray and more CJ Frederick.
Yeah, I actually think. You may need a Joe Toussaint or Aaron Ulis for a couple minutes a game, like we saw last night. But honestly, in most of these games, I'm starting to like the top eight now, where you've got they're longer guys, but Keegan Murray, Patrick McCaffrey, and Jack Nungy off the bench. I mean, just kind of mix and match. As long as you got Frederick available for 20 minutes.
Frederick, really, Jabo, and Wieskamp at the backcourt. Yeah, I mean, and we're starting to see a little bit of elevation of Tony Perkins. Maybe he's becoming the nine.
Yeah,
in that rotation, and I think he's been really, really gaining confidence. Certainly, he's a good player. I liked him last night, even though he didn't score. But he doesn't really need to score. But that, I wrote about it in my story. But that offensive rebounds that he got when it was a 10-point game at that point, and he got the rebound and kicked it out to Garza for a three to make it a 13-point game. That was a pretty big sequence, I thought, because that's a kid. What is he, 6'4", kind of going in the lane there and mixing it up a little bit. And he just looks like he's a guy that's going to be aggressive, but not in a way that's going to hurt you necessarily. And he does play good defense, so maybe he'll become a guy that ends up being more of an 8 to 10 minute guy, and at the expense of Joe T or Connor or whoever.
Yeah, it's interesting. Obviously, I know you're writing a little bit more on CJ's situation today. Mm. We talked to him last night. I came away awfully encouraged with what he was saying, but I also don't, his go-to quote there was, trust me, let me actually read it to you guys. He said, I mean this in all sincerity, I'm getting a lot better. I feel like I can start being myself again. So, I think that some of that is, he's just having a good week with what they're still calling a lower leg injury, but is the plantar fasciitis, and even if they're not going to say it, and that could crop up again, knowing the nature of that injury. So
that is right. Yep. So you're never out of the woods, unfortunately. But that's good to hear. I mean, it sounds like he was really struggling with it, and I can imagine. I mean, he had the situation last year where he had to kind of go through those games where he had a miss, and it sounded like last year was kind of like a day-to-day thing too, where you kind of see how you feel in the morning and test it out. And so here we go again with a different injury, but similar. And it's got to wear on a young man, obviously. And so you hope he can play more often than not going forward and feels better most days. But I had a question last night from a reader, why don't they just save him for March? But it doesn't sound like that's a possibility. Like, he had his waited out for a month and it's going to suddenly go away. I mean, it's going to be there for a while, and so you might as well just play him as much as you can when you can.
Yeah, if he's going to wake up feeling good and he can go. And he said the one question that I can't remember who asked it, might have been Kakert. You went to the trainer's room that one time. He claims that it was a taping issue, that the tape on his foot had came apart or something, and he had to go get that fixed. So Who knows? Yeah. They're a little bit. They're obviously very coy on this.
Yeah, it is weird. Even he was. Lower leg.
That's lower leg, and that's all I can say.
I'm not sure what they're worried about there, but that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, he's had foot problems his whole career, basically. Both feet. Gosh. I feel bad for him. But there's no doubt. You can just watching the games. He's very valuable. You've seen the articles we've written on it. That's what we believe, and I think it's played out. Hawkeye's now 30-9 when C.J. Frederick is available for a whole game in his career. That's pretty telling. And a lot of those games were without Bohannon last year. So,
that's right. Yeah.
Do you want to talk about anything else on the basketball game last night? Or do you want to talk about it? Or should we move into the Big Ten race?
Let's move into the Big Ten race.
Yeah. It's interesting, especially with Michigan on pause. They're the only team in the league that hasn't really hit a slide, but that's because they haven't been playing. I mean, you look at Ohio State and Wisconsin and Rutgers, they've all played 14 conference games already. And, Michigan's still at 9. They're 8-1, but they do play Wisconsin this Sunday, I believe, right? So,
that's going to be a really interesting game.
Yeah, it's going to get cranked up here soon. But let's just look at this race because one thing on my mind, obviously beyond the Big Ten regular season title, which Iowa has, wanted to contend for and be in for at the final week, is that race for a top four seed at the Big Ten tournament, something that Fran McCaffrey's never had the double bye in the Big Ten tournament. Although they've tied for third a couple times, they've lost the tiebreaker to get to the five seed both times. So can they get to a top four seed? Let's have that discussion before we get into Big Ten title discussion. Right now, the Hawkeyes, after last night's win, it was such a big win because that puts them in a tie for fifth at 8-5 and a game and a half ahead of Rutgers at 7-7, and same with Indiana, which is 6-6. So, obviously, you have that head-to-head on Rutgers as well. And Iowa's tied with Purdue, which it beat. So it has that head-to-head. That's big. It has that head-to-head lone meeting with the Boilers this year. They don't travel to Mackey Arena unless they go to the first four.
Don't even say it.
I know. So they're in fifth going into this Michigan State game. And the teams ahead of them are Michigan 8-1, Illinois 9-3, Ohio State 10-4, and Wisconsin after beating Nebraska last night 9-5. So, I guess what do you make about the importance of trying to get into that top four mark, and how do you think this plays out?
Yeah, I think it's really important because I don't think they're going to get to the number one spot, and that was your preseason goal. So then maybe if you get in the top four seed for the first time, you can kind of sell that to your fans. Like, hey, that's still an accomplishment. It's a big accomplishment in this league. No question about it. So I think I don't say imperative, but I think it really is it becomes the next thing to aim for if you're a Hawkeye player, fan, whatever. I mean, certainly you can still aim to be number one, but I just don't see him getting there. And Wisconsin's finishing schedule is brutal. It's Iowa twice, obviously. So those games to me become the key to this because Illinois, obviously, they got the tiebreaker. Maybe you get there. So they're only two behind in the loss column. I'm not going to count that out. Ohio State, obviously, you get them one more time. That would be huge to go win over there.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you want to win the title, you have to win over there. To me, they'd have to win, six of their last seven. I know it's possible, but that just seems really tough for me. So, I'm going to aim. Let's see what we can talk about getting Iowa into the top four. And I think to me, it comes down to those head to heads with Wisconsin in particular, because Wisconsin still has to play, as you mentioned, Michigan. They have two against Iowa. The only gimme they have left is Northwestern, and Iowa gets Nebraska at some point. So those cancel out. And then every one of their games is a really, really tough game.
I've got it in front of me here. Yeah, I've got it in front of me. Yeah. So they host Michigan on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Huge game there. And you would think, actually, that's a tough spot for Michigan coming off their long pause.
It's a tough spot for Iowa fans, too, because you almost Michigan there just to get Wisconsin that extra loss and assume that Michigan can't be caught? Or do you not want to concede that yet? I don't know. That's tough.
Yeah, exactly. I know. That's why I totally agree with what you just said, that those head-to-heads against Wisconsin are going to be I think the difference between getting a top four or not. Obviously, Iowa has to take care of some other business, but here's Wisconsin's finishing stretch. First of all, they're 9-5 in the Big Ten, but two of those wins are against Nebraska. One of them is against Northwestern at home. They've had a lighter schedule to date, so it's not like they've been world beaters. I mean, I'm trying to find their best win. I would say their best win is kind of like Iowa, maybe, at Rutgers. They lost at home to Maryland. They lost to Marquette. They lost to Penn State.
I watched that game.
And they lost at Michigan by 23. So they just haven't looked great, in my opinion, this year. But
they're not great.
No. So
this
is
solid.
So Michigan, and then home against Iowa. So two huge games at Northwestern, like you mentioned. Then they play home against Illinois, at Purdue, at Iowa. So they could truly go 1-5 there, or 2-4. So it is a chance. Mm-hmm. You're right. That's the Iowa's best path, I think, to the top four.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting matchup because they're both very experienced teams. Everybody's written about how old they are.
Yeah.
The players. But I just don't think, like, to me, Wisconsin just doesn't have a star. Yeah, I guess, Trice is a really good player. They got some solid players. They just don't have a star the way Iowa does. And they don't have, obviously, they don't have the firepower. So they just have to kind of get you in one of those games where they kind of muck it up a little bit, like Indiana's done against Iowa. And, you know, try to get the game down into the 60s, maybe. So I still think beating them twice is going to be tough just because. Again, they're so experienced. They just find ways to, you know, to get you into their style of play and you know, and get you frustrated or whatever. And I just think, to me, they have the team with like the lowest ceiling. I can't see them going anywhere in March. Like, I just, like, who the hell would be afraid to play Indiana or Wisconsin in March? You know, you're like, oh, thanks,
year,
bring them on.
Yeah, I agree.
But for the regular season, they're kind of built for that long haul. Just kind of grind it out and, you know, get a bunch of wins and, you know. You know, they've got talent, you know, but I think those are going to be really interesting games just to see which style prevails.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But I do think, I've been saying this all, obviously, but I do think Iowa's the better team, you know.
I do too.
We've seen that they're also better than Indiana, and they lost twice there, so I mean, that doesn't always translate, but I still think it's probably going to be in a split, and they're going to come down with like some just kind of weird tiebreaker scenario, and you got to come down to the very last game, like to try to like almost like last year, where you're basically playing for the 4 or 5 seed on the last day of the season.
Yeah, it could be the same. It could be the very same,
which is fun. It makes that game really, really meaningful. But obviously, Iowa will really do itself some favors if they just go ahead and sweep Wisconsin.
Yes, yeah,
and get that out of the way.
Yeah, plus with that head-to-head against Purdue, then you really like their shot to be a top four seed. And here's my other point on that, Mark, is if you're a top four seed, not only do you get to, you know, wait till Friday to play a game, and this isn't necessarily all about the Big Ten tournament, but that's just another game of wear and tear. You don't have to put on your body. You don't have to put on CJ Frederick's body. Mm-hmm. You know, God forbid, you know, you play that Thursday game and Luka Garza gets hurt. I mean, it's just a lot. There's just so many advantages to not playing until Friday at that Big Ten tournament. And this is the other advantage is, honestly, the 12 seed this year could be pretty scary. It could be a Michigan State. It could be.
Oh, might not be something.
It could be a Penn State, which is.
You know, they are frightening.
Yeah,
they can shoot it.
It honestly could even be probably not, but it could be even a Minnesota could dip down, and right now Maryland is the 12 seed, but you know we've seen Maryland can jump up. So so if you're the 5 seed, you got to play someone like that, okay, and then. So, number one, you got to get past that game, which Iowa historically has had trouble in that 5-12 game. but number two, if you are the 4 seed, maybe, you know, maybe a Maryland or Penn State or Michigan State knocks off Wisconsin or if they're the 5, say. Yep. And so you catch a beneficial matchup against a team on short rest that you know you're better than.
That's third game. Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're in the Saturday of the Big Ten tournament for the first time since 2006.
The first time, yeah. So. That's what I was thinking, the same thing. Like, that would also be a big thing. It's like, I mean, it didn't sound like a big thing to a lot of people, but I think for Iowa fans, you know, that would be a welcome relief to finally be able to check that off the list and stop that narrative of, like, you know, they never been to the Saturday in a while. They finally got there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think you're right. I think that's like the immediate goal. Obviously the long-term goal remains, you know, the big tournament. And I still think they got a chance to do some damage there, but, Yeah, so I think this is like kind of a get right spot last night was for Iowa. I think they needed that win, and yeah. I thought it was really I was surprised that it was that I guess I was gonna say easy, but decisive, I guess.
Yeah, that's a good word. Good word.
I really kind of thought they'd get into the last 5 minutes again, then really have to make some plays, kind of like the first meeting with the Breckers, and you know, credit them. They avoided that. They avoided that drama and. Yeah. Now they get to go try to sweep. They can try to get a second sweep for the week. Try to go sweep Michigan State. I mean, yeah. When's the last time that's ever happened?
Yeah, great point. This could be. So they've swept Northwestern this year. They swept Rutgers.
Yep.
Yeah, sweeping Michigan State, that'd be big.
Big, yeah.
And then the other thing, you know, some of you out there might be saying, "Oh, big whoop!" You know, a four seed in the Big Ten tournament. That's not what we're playing for. But if they get to that point, I think that they. That means they've had a pretty strong season, and their net rating is going to be very, very high in that case. And they're probably going to be in line for a 3-4 seed in the Big Ten, an NCAA tournament at that point. You know, if you're, and if you are in that four, you almost guarantee to avoid yourself a potential for a bad loss. You know what I mean? Like you don't want to lose that 5-12 game and get a bad loss going into the NCAAs.
Right.
So there's just a lot to play for here, in my opinion, for what we're all pointing towards, which is March.
Yeah.
So, with Frederick, I think they can, honestly, I'm happy to keep trumpeting this. I think with Frederick, they've got a chance to do, you know, make the Final Four. They can make the finals of the Big Ten tournament. I think they can do a lot of special things with this team still.
Agreed.
One little thing, from last night, what did you think of the? Did you see the haters tweet from the Iowa basketball account?
Oh, about the five.
Five.
Yeah, I did see that. Yeah.
Yeah, that was. What did you make of that?
That's funny. I mean, they're having some fun. That's what the social media accounts do. Yeah, I'm not sure the young man Shane Sturts that tweeted that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's what you do if you're a brand like that. Now you give your social media account to some saucy 22-year-old and. You know, give them a little bit of boundaries. watch yourself a little bit. But yeah, it's supposed to be about being fun and being kind of out there. Yeah, I thought that was fine.
Yeah,
I mean, two of those against Rutgers, right?
One's against Northwestern when they were ranked.
Yeah, so there. Yeah, so it's a little bit
Purdue, maybe a little misleading, but North Carolina, I believe, are the other ones.
So yeah, it probably sounds better than it actually is.
Exactly. I know.
But it is accurate. And they're going by the AP rankings, obviously, because Rutgers was not in the
That's right. Yeah, week. Yeah.
But that's everybody does that. You kind of use your use those kind of facts to your advantage.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's all in fun.
But by Monday, all five of those teams might not be ranked, just FYI. So all right, let's move on to football. We've gone about a half hour on basketball. Good conversation there. Oh, do you want to actually, you know what? Let's just give me your nutshell preview of this Michigan State game. What are you looking for? You're going.
Well, I'm definitely going to look at Iowa's defense again because I think it has been pretty good this last couple of games, better. And here's another team, the Michigan State, that's really kind of struggling on offense right now. In fact, I think that 78 they put up against Iowa might have been one of their best games of the year offensively. I watched their last game, and they pulled it out against Penn State, but it was not pretty. This team is just not a vintage Michigan State team, obviously, and they just have not found themselves yet. I kept thinking they might at some point, and maybe they will Saturday. I mean, obviously, Iowa, that could happen, but I really think that Iowa can beat these guys just because they don't have the offensive talent. So if Iowa shows up defensively, they're going to score points, and I think Iowa. Honestly, it's a really good. I think I'm picking them to win. I really think they have a good chance to win this with no fans there. That's huge for Iowa.
Yeah.
That place is this. It's brutal when fans there.
Mm-hmm.
But with no fans, I mean, it's just gonna be Izzo. He's a loud guy, but what can you do really? And so I do think it would be a letdown for Iowa to take this win. And I'm not saying this win is like so monumental that it's like huge momentum, but it's a nice little bounce back win. And to go there and then it's kind of like fall again, if it's the same pattern where the last 8 minutes they get beat or they get up 15 three-pointers or something, that we've seen in the past kind of crops up again. You know what the fans are going to say, obviously, but it just would be, I think, kind of demoralizing for this team, because I think this is a chance for them to, you know, they won five straight in this league early in the year. I mean, that is really difficult to do. And this is a chance for them to kind of go on one of those runs again. You know, I'm not saying five straight, maybe four out of five or, you know, whatever, and kind of put themselves back in that conversation as, are they among the best teams in the Big Ten in the country? But you can't do that, I don't think, if you lose to a pretty mediocre Michigan. I mean, their offense is like is 87th, I think, in KenPom, and they're just really. It's so weird to say, but you were talking about earlier, they could be a 12 seed in this league.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they really are. I mean, they're Maryland this year. They're just a team. They're just a team. Yeah. How much do you think this would mean to the players to sweep Michigan State?
Absolutely. I know.
They've just been a punching bag for this program for so many years.
Exactly.
And to go up there, you know, and they beat them here, and it wasn't a decisive win, but they grinded that one out, and they go up there and do the same thing. I mean, I think that would be just a huge sign that this is a different Iowa team. So it's not a must win, but it would just be a bad loss.
Yeah, it would be disappointing because you got to win some of these games. You can't just keep losing, to mediocre teams on the road. If you look at KenPom, he's got Iowa winning 81-74. He gives Michigan State
the same score as last game.
He gives Michigan State a 26% chance to win. So that gives you, he has Michigan State losing out. In the head-to-heads.
Really?
In the head-to-heads. Yeah, the best chance they've got for a win the rest of the way is 36% at Maryland. But they've got a tough schedule. Wow. They've got a tough schedule the rest of the way. They got Iowa, Purdue, Indiana, Illinois, Ohio State, Maryland, Michigan. So
he's got a 26% chance of Michigan State winning?
Actually, but you know what? There's a couple games that are probably need to be rescheduled. I'm guessing one against Michigan and probably another one somewhere in here. But 26% chance of win against Iowa. That's what it says.
Wow. So, well, here's my hot take. I'm gonna put it at 25%.
I'd love it.
I'm going 75% Iowa.
Okay.
Book it.
All right, you got it. And this is a Mark Gamert trip, so you'll look for his coverage on Saturday from East Lansing. All right, football. Let's talk football. And by the way, let me give one last comment on basketball. If Iowa wins this game, remember how all the hype that was going into that at Illinois game a couple weeks ago? I feel like the at Wisconsin game on next Thursday will have similar type of anticipation for this Iowa team.
Especially if Wisconsin beats Michigan.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So something to look forward to next week. And then presumably after that game, Iowa would get Penn State and Nebraska at home. We don't have a Nebraska date yet, but it has to be that week.
So, again, a chance for Iowa. They are horrible.
They really are. Did you know that the last time they won a Big Ten game was actually against Iowa in that terrible game last year on my birthday?
Yeah. I bet. You know who else probably knows that?
Who?
Iowa. I bet the Hawkeyes are aware.
Yeah, that was
a tough one. Yeah, no, you're right. And Penn State, I really think that's a sneaky, tough game.
Especially if you beat Wisconsin.
They played so well against Iowa last year, and they those guards are good. Like they can light it up. So you got to really be careful there.
Definitely.
But you're right. That does set up as a potential. As I said, this could be a spot for them to run off five straight.
Yeah.
If they play to their potential, they're the better team in all these matchups.
Yeah, I would say the most likely spot that Luka Garza breaks the scoring record is that Penn State game. So that would be a tough one to actually lose. Mm-hmm. You know, if he breaks the record, you kind of got to have a win with the scoring record thing. You know, it's kind of how it's supposed to go. Anyway, football.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay, so I'm gonna pose it to you this way, Mark, so we can get through this efficiently. Of the three departures we officially learned of on Wednesday, Tim Polasek as offensive coordinator to the Wyoming program. Derek Foster, we believe, to the San Diego Chargers, or Los Angeles Chargers, well, we know. And then Mark Kallenberger not returning to football, presumed starting left tackle for the Hawkeyes. So of those three departures, not knowing who's going to replace them, what's the biggest loss there of those three?
For this year or for long term?
What's the biggest loss, yeah. What do
you think? No, obviously for this year, I think it's the player. I think Gallenberger, you're right. You've lost Jackson. Coy Kronk, we know, is not coming back. Jack Plum looked okay, right? He's a big body.
Okay, yeah. That's a good way to put it.
Absent another grad transfer, another Coy Kronk type of guy, a healthier grad transfer, hopefully for Iowa if they get one. I'm going to say Gallenberger right now, honestly.
Yeah. Obviously that was a surprise, and nobody was expecting it.
Go ahead.
It sounded like he had actually come back to, started training. It's not like this was, I was holding it back for a while, but I think he started training and just realized his heart wasn't in it. Kind of like Jamin Colbert a little bit, I think. If you're not all in on football, that's a grind, man. Yep. I told someone last night, you can't just fake it for 8 months to get to the season. You gotta be all in.
Exactly.
In that program.
So there's two smart young men with have their degrees, so they making their best decision for themselves. I think that's fine. But you're right, I was surprised it just feels like every year it was gonna be his year to start.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And every year he's kinda moving around, and last year, the Kronk thing, but then eventually Kronk got hurt, so he did start, but it was always at a different position, it seemed like. And he just never got to be like the guy at one spot. And this would have been his year, I think. But I just wonder, I wonder, do you think the Polisek departure played into his decision at all? Or
It could have been maybe slightly. He's got a good relationship with the guy. I mean, Polisek's been here four years, the same time as Mark. Yep. So I know he's been. That could be. Yeah, that could be something to that. That's fair.
But anyway.
Yeah, so what's interesting is, obviously we mentioned Jack Plum. The other options, we'll have to see. There's a lot of big young linemen on the roster, so you just need one or two to kind of come through. And I'm interested to see, Mark, these two early enrollees, these freshmen, true freshmen.
Yeah, David
Yeah, David Koff enrolls early. He was probably of the five offensive linemen they brought in, probably the most trumpeted. I mean, Ohio State and Michigan offers. Yeah. He was down to those three. Yep. We saw Northwestern start a left tackle.
That's right.
As a true freshman who was kind of built from the same mold. Yeah, exactly. And I think that could be a positive. He's 6'6", 295 from the Chicago area. Colby, same thing, 6'6", 295. And you look at some of the true freshmen that got a cup of coffee last year, Mason Richmond, 6'6", 289. And then Tyler Ellsbury, I'm looking for his number here on the program to get his size. Where are you, Tyler? Meantime, I see Nick DeJong on here. He's 6'6", 296. He's a walk-on. Ellsbury 6'5", 302. Don't forget Tyler Endress, one of the top recruits from Norwalk a couple years ago, 6'6", 310. So they definitely got bodies that they could slide out to tackle. And I wonder if Justin Britt, even with his athleticism,
just going to ask that, because I just think they got to find a spot for that guy at some point.
I know. They have to. Yeah.
And the interior line is pretty stacked. But, the situation for me, the concern for me would be, those are the tackle spots, boy. That's where your best guy's got to be there. I mean, no offense against guards, but you can kind of hide, less experienced guy maybe there a little bit than you can out of tackle. That's especially, it's a big year for Petras or whoever the quarterback is too. So,
right.
I really don't. You think they'll almost certainly go get a grad transfer?
Maybe.
Or a transfer period. I guess it doesn't have to be a grad transfer. Yeah, right. Just a transfer. Yeah.
Maybe.
Because they got such a good selling spot here for Iowa.
Yeah.
It's Iowa. Who doesn't want to come here if you're coming from we saw last year with Heflin and Kronk. If you're coming from a smaller program or maybe a less prestigious program and you want to play offensive line,
True, and
you're sitting here looking at Iowa with two tackle spots open, potentially two starting spots. There could be some guys that are just salivating at that chance. So,
good point.
But you're right. Maybe they really, really like these young guys and they think let's get them in there and develop them and give them, because the other thing that's working against Iowa potentially is the number of guys that come into this program now that aren't only going to be here for 3 years. We've seen this now lately. If they're not really that good, and Tristan Wirfs type of person, Epinesa, and you're only going to get, I mean, you might as well play him now to get some value out of those 3 years, right?
Right.
You know, instead of just starting for 1 year and then, oh, shoot, this guy's really good. Now he's gone. Now it's Davion Nixon. Now we lost him or whatever. So maybe that's going to factor into their thinking too. Let's, you know, if these guys are really that good, they're NFL caliber players, let's get, you know, 30 games out of them or whatever we can get.
One guy I neglected to mention was Josh Volk, redshirt freshman from Cedar Rapids Xavier, 6'4", 314. So, and they've
Why do you not like Josh Volk? Did he do something to you?
Yeah. Well, this I don't know their numbers yet because they're young, and so I kind of missed them when I was scanning the roster. But I don't think Cody Ince kicks
Josh,
out.
Josh, we apologize.
No, 6'4", 285. And Kyler Schott. Yeah. I mean, those guys are guards. Yeah. You know, they're built to be guards.
Yeah, and that's fine. I mean, you need those too. Yeah. No. Yeah, because that's the thing. Like, this line was set in the interior. It was the, you know.
Yeah.
That's why it's, I think, because it becomes kind of a bigger blow. I mean, obviously, if Kallenberger was a guard, mm-hmm. you know, you'd say, you know, that's, you know, good luck. It's too bad. But that tackle spot, boy, he was the one guy they could kind of count on.
Just put Linderbaum out there. Move Schott or Britt to center.
Yeah.
They won't, but I mean, he's just so good at center. But still, I think they're going to be okay with what they got. I'm not surprised they bring someone in.
It's like defensive secondary; it always works out. But
yeah, but who will coach them? Who will coach them? They don't have a coach right now. Assuming Kirk Ferentz has probably named himself interim offensive line coach in the meantime. Do you think
he wants to get back out there?
So I think Kirk will take his time with his hire. He's stalled in the past on hires. The Jay Neiman hire took a long mm-hmm. time, for example. Until he finds the right fit.
Neiman a guy you might move across, like a?
Yeah, you know, that's not a bad thought. Not a bad thought. But
veteran coach. I mean, obviously he did it before.
But right? Defensive coordinator. I don't know if. I'm not sure what Neiman's. If he's got an offensive background or not, but that doesn't seem to matter.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. He's a veteran coach, but I mean, I think he's. I mean, they might be looking for a little bigger role for him. He's basically kind of backing up Kelvin Bell right now.
Yeah,
but that's just the thought I had.
Yeah, exactly. What was the name that just popped in my head? Actually, it'll come to me. But. Reese Morgan. I mean, is it possible?
That's what I mean. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Did you mention that?
Isn't that why you did that? Because that's what I was thinking. But yeah, because I said they'd done that before. I was like,
yeah,
you know, was that? I wasn't here for that when that transition happened. But wasn't it basically just like, you know, he's a veteran coach, and this is a spot where I want a veteran coach. Like, I don't care what your background is, or you know,
right.
what you've done before. Like, if you can coach, you can coach.
Yeah,
but.
I just wonder if
I'm just speculating.
Could he bring Reese out of retirement for 1 year while they search for maybe. I don't know. I know Reese is, you know.
Yeah.
He likes to be around football.
All aboard?
Yeah, I think maybe.
Okay. All right.
We'll see. Right. I'm not floating that, but I'm just saying like that.
That's not – well, you just did.
Well, I guess I did.
You literally just floated it,
Chad. Yeah, I did float it.
Don't float it back.
You're right. I can't like float it back. I can't float it back.
Let's get the rumor out there. I'm actually going to tweet it here in a minute and say I'll just say sources. So sources say.
Say at least one source
hearing,
says.
Or yeah. I'll do a Tommy Virch. I'm hearing. It's actually just the voices in my head. I'm hearing, but I'm hearing it. But I also think there's a chance here. You know, to maybe get. You know, go younger again. That's what he's done with his last few hires, right? Derek Foster and Polisek himself was a pretty young guy when he got here,
true, yeah.
Copeland, you know, maybe some recruiting blood. Obviously, Kirk Ferentz has a big pipeline. I'm sure he's going to have, you know, plenty to choose from, and you know, I'm sure he'll get guys that he, you know, values and guys that maybe they'll be here for a long time. Maybe they won't be, but because it's rare, as you pointed out in your story, it's rare to have this kind of movement on his coaching staff.
Yeah, voluntary movement. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
I think you have to make, you know, at least one minority hire here, don't you? I mean, it'd be a tough look coming off this last off season to
agreed
to to hire a couple white guys to.
Yeah, Yeah. So now, what do you think? Now, there's always speculation about everybody wants to speculate ex Hawkeyes whenever there's an open.
I know.
So have you thought of any? Russell, who running backs? Sean Green? Does Sean Green want to coach?
Running backs is, to me, the running backs position. You almost need a good recruiter there, that more than anything. Because if you can recruit a good running back, that's 75% of the battle. I mean, we see that with Tyler Goodson.
Coach him.
Yeah, exactly. So
just hand him the ball and point him. Yeah. I can coach that.
So the names aren't coming in my head right as we do this. I didn't write any down live, but offensive
Marshall
line.
Marshall Yanda
for
offensive line.
There you go. That would actually be amazing. But
just bring a big star in here.
Yeah, exactly. pay him, 1/20th of what he made in the NFL and ask him to work harder.
With no glory, no credit.
No.
Yeah.
Be here at 6, stay till 11, and you're on the road away from your family recruiting all the time.
Also, you're the new guy, so here, break down some film for us. We'll be back in the morning. Yeah. Brian Bulaga, is he ready to retire and come back?
Now you're floating some stuff. You're really floating now.
It's a subscriber-only podcast, Chad.
That's true.
It's non-binding. Non-binding.
I do think of the two losses, I think the Foster loss is probably a little bigger just because I think he was doing a good job recruiting.
Yeah, he had the South, but didn't he? I'm
he's starting
sure.
to make inroads.
I guess
Copeland
does a little bit, but yeah.
Yeah, but
I mean, that's how they got Goodson, right?
He kind of sealed the deal, I do believe. I think that was a group effort, but that's a good point. That'll be a loss, but awesome for him. By the way, I mean, we think the world of Derek Foster. I would think you agree, and
nice,
cool. Yeah, I mean, he's not even 35 years old, and now he's going to coach for the Los Angeles Chargers.
They don't have any. But who's going to have to bring
Austin
Eckler? Isn't he?
Yeah, right.
Is he still there? Okay. Yeah. He's the same size as Derek Foster. They'll be able to look each other in the eye. That's a good thing, I guess.
So, be interesting. I mean, he gets to go out. It's an interesting franchise. I think that's an up-and-coming franchise with Justin Herbert there. So.
Yeah, interesting is a good way to put it, yeah. No fans.
Yeah, true, yeah.
It'll be like the pandemic for him. He'll be out there in an empty stadium.
Mm-hmm. good for him. And I think, what do you make the Polisic departure? I mean, he's going to take a pay cut to go out there. For sure. I mean, he's making. He was making $400K.
Betting on himself, obviously. I think he's betting that he'll be able to show enough to move up quickly. I mean, sometimes you got to take a step back to go forward, as you know, in any profession. We knew he always wanted to do this. He wanted to be an offensive coordinator. He wants to call plays and prove that he can do that. And obviously, that was not going to happen here. I think that's safe to say, right?
Not as long as Brian's here.
As a coach, he knows. Obviously, he coached with them for 6 years before. So, it kind of makes sense on that level to me. Some people were kind of questioning it, like, what the heck? What are you doing? But, it's his life, and this is his time to kind of go out. I do think you can really make a name for you. If he goes out there and, like, does something really kind of inventive or just kind of shows that he has a knack for that job, even though it's the Mountain West, like, puts up 30, 40 points a game, and, they develop a really good quarterback, or he does something with a spread offense or whatever. They'll notice. I mean, he'll get noticed, and a bigger school will come call for him and say, "Hey, well, we really like the way you think." And, of course, he can go out there and fall on his face too, and then he'll know that maybe that's not the job for him. But I think he has head coaching aspirations, really. So you got to be a coordinator at some point before you get to that position, usually. So
yeah, and obviously, I think any of us in life would welcome a chance to go. If you had a good experience with a boss, like he probably did with Craig Bohl. I mean, to be reunited with that person. I mean, that was actually one of the main reasons I came back to the Register, because Randy Brubaker was still here. He was my favorite boss of all time, and he was one of the top directors in the newsroom when I was at USA Today, and so that was attractive to come back here. Sort of work for him and be under him. So, I think that's I think that's part of the reason too. It's not always about money, you know. And we know Tim's a big outdoorsman. I mean, there's no greater outdoors space than Wyoming. the least populated state in the country. So, I'm sure he'll like it out there. I'm sure he can do some hunting and some golfing.
Yeah, he always seemed like a really nice guy too. As you know, whenever we talked to him as well. So
yeah, for sure.
Wishing them both the best, but I also think the coaching staff will be fine with whoever replaces them too. I don't think it's going to be something we'll see some huge drop off.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, I'm going to let you go because I know you got more right on CJ Frederick and stuff like that. So appreciate you, man.
Yep,
I'll have a good trip.
All right, thanks, man. Appreciate
it. See you, bud. All right, folks. Appreciate you hanging with us. This is a long one. Hope you made it through to the end. If not, you'll never hear this. So I appreciate you guys. And let's wrap up, I guess, just on the basketball conversation. We talked a lot of football there, just to kind of build off everything we talked about. I know it's just one win, but it was a win I really liked, just because you saw good Patrick McCaffrey. You saw good combinations, and obviously more than the Wieskamp stuff that I wrote about, the fact that CJ Frederick was able to be out there for 17 minutes and proclaims afterwards that he's getting better and feeling more like himself now and no longer in tears, frankly. So he's hopefully, for him, for the Hawkeyes, turned a corner on that injury front. He's such a big factor. Just watch him in these games and the spacing and the defense he provides, and his shot's going to come. He didn't score last night, but he will, and he will in a big spot as long as he's healthy, probably more than once. So big game on Saturday. I believe it's 1:30 at the Breslin Center. Fox, tune in. Talk to you later.